in the 1990s in a different way and in a different form. We now call them tiered networks or limited networks, where we say to individuals and employees, if you want to go for that ingrown toenail to our major academic medical centers for fear that while you're there you might get cancer, so you don't want to go. You don't want to go to the local community hospital because they lack the, you know, the chief person. You're going to have to pay for it. And these tiered networks are really taking off. They're taking off in Massachusetts, and I suspect in future years you're going to find them around the country. We need to learn more about them. They're not, you know, everyone doesn't love them. They would like to be able to go, you know, most people want to be able to go wherever they want to go, and they don't want to pay for it. But in more and more of the new products of these tiered networks, and these high deductible health plans are having an impact. People are concerned about how, you know, it's not going to change the curve all that much, because we know that most of the money that's spent are spent by the sickest people, and those are the people that are not affected by the high deductible plans, but it has had an impact. So we are seeing big changes in our insurance market. And our providers are not sitting idly by. I think we talked about it yesterday. They realize where the thing is changing, and some of our most expensive are doing the most interesting things. I don't want to second guess them. They are really doing good stuff. So these changes are going on. But I also need to make clear what the private market did. And this is the private market. This is an attorney. We talked about this last time. The Attorney General of the state of Massachusetts 2 years ago issued a report for essentially the same services, how much our plans, not our, in that crazy Brill article, this is what they actually are getting paid by Bloomberg. And look at the difference. And the reds are the academic medical centers. And you see they're all over the map. And the guy, it's amazing, the guys at the right over there believe every dollar they got is justified because they're doing all these wonderful things. The ones on the left somehow aren't so crazy about this model, and they would like to do that. But this is the marketplace, an environment where you have a lot stronger place. And now the balance is, are the people on the right really providing that much better care? And the quality measures don't show it. Maybe we don't have good enough quality measures to do that. But you should realize, and I suspect if you looked at most of your states, it would look exactly the same. They don't want to talk about it. This is, I don't know whether it's an elephant or whatever is in the room, but this is going on around the United States, in most of your states. So, basically, with that as a background, the state of Massachusetts has been trying to deal with this, and finally in August of 2012, it passed the third law, which has a lot of pieces which I am not going to go into, trying to do a lot of the things that Dan talked about. I think he laid out that list, and it was a very important list, and we need to spend more time on. States have a lot of responsibilities, they have a lot of authorities that we just don't see. And this legislation deals with it all. But I want to just focus on one piece. It happens to be a piece I'm a little more involved with. And that is to sit over many of these changes to try to get the system to work better. I want to make it very, very clear. This is not a regulatory model. What exactly it is, I haven't quite figured out. But I'm too old and I'm falling apart. I am not going to be a regulator again. And so they created an 11-person commission to oversee what is going on in the state of Massachusetts. All aspects of it, from the provider changes, to the insurance changes, to what consumers are getting, to all the different pieces. And this commission is independent of the governor and the legislature. There are two members of the commission that are appointed secretaries from the department. But other than that, the 11 commissioners, the remaining nine, were independently selected. Yeah, by the governor, by the legislature, by the different. And actually, you had three in this room. David Cutler left and Wendy Everett there. And for whatever reason, I became the chair. So there's this commission. Now, it would take me hours to explain all the different responsibilities they gave us. I mean, we go all the way from deciding when a hospital can ask a nurse to work overtime. to allocating a major distressed hospital fund financed by the richest people, the systems at the other end of that chart. It's amazing how rich people believe every dollar they have they need. But that's another story, so they don't want to get into the distressed hospital fund. The main, one of the really keys to Massachusetts is we are developing a database that you would die for. Even the federal government doesn't come close in really getting at the kind of information. There's an all-claims, all-payer database that's going to go into extreme detail on exactly what is going on in this state in terms of how much is being not only charged but paid for. What are the services that are being paid for? Who's getting it? Who's doing that? And this all-claims database will be, and it's in a separate organization called the Center for Health Information and Analysis called CHEER. So that is our sister organization, and the two of us sort of are working together. And we have a very quality staff that's growing. We have a lot of responsibilities. We have a lot of authority, not a lot of, you know, we don't have the power. So what are we supposed to do? The state has made a commitment that is going to keep its total healthcare spending, not its Medicaid budget, its total healthcare spending in line with the growth in the so-called state GDP, but not the actual GDP, but the potential state GDP. So first we have to decide what is the appropriateness of the target. Is the spending in line with that target? If it's not, why is it not? How are individual providers performing? If they're not performing and changing the way they receive care and pay and get care paid for, we can require them to come up with corrective action plans. I'm trying to decide what we are. I sort of have this analogy. I'm not sure it's a good one. We're sort of like their mother. When they don't eat the right food, we have to tell them you're supposed to eat your green vegetables. You're not only supposed to eat the dessert, but ultimately we're also like the mother who also has a 21-year-old who says, I'm not going to listen to you. So that's the other one. So we have corrective action plans. We are required to look at any kind of a merger or acquisition or stuff like that and decide whether the potential is there for them to break the bank. And yesterday we issued our first report because our largest healthcare system decided that it was too small and that it wanted to get larger. And so it is about to merge with the largest, I think, independent hospital system we have left. And the question is, well, they thought that was okay. Well, it may not be so okay, so we've told them we want to do a very careful review on the implications of that for the future growth and spending in the state and the kind of marketplace in the southern part of the state. We can, at some point, penalize providers who fail to reform their system. Most of it is to just make available to the public what is going on. We are, as I said, we're not a regular, we can't stop them, but we can say, this isn't good for the state when it comes to spending and so on. So we can penalize them with some, but that's way into the future. And if we believe that somehow they have really abused their market power, we can refer them to the state attorney general or to the Justice Department. So the commission has, we hold public hearing, I'm not gonna go through. We certify whether something is an ACO. We have to decide that, whether it's a medical home, according to our definition. We assist in the review of risk-based providers to make sure that people who take on risk really have the capacity to do it. And we have to decide whether they are or not. We establish patient protection and quality oversight. This is our benchmark. I mean, the idea is that if we can keep the growth in spending along that red line, as opposed to where we think costs are going to go, we can actually help bend that curve. Now, we are really there to assist the marketplace. As I said, we are not a regulatory arm. We are in the middle. And that's what I said, it's really difficult in my mind to sort of figure us out. And we're gonna, you know, so we're playing, this country has never done this before. So we're sort of in the middle. Now, of course, the question that people keep asking me, suppose you fail, and I go, wait a minute. It's not me. It's not him. It's you. This, you know, the providers, you know, the hospitals or the insurance company, you know, all of a sudden I get invited to meetings I wasn't invited to before. So, it's not me. It's you. And the answer is, well, suppose we fail. Well, I don't know what's next. But I will tell you, we are very well organized for somebody to write a one sentence line into the legislature that would move us to what some of us think may be needed, which is an all-payer system. But right now, and then I'm retired, because I told you I'm not going to be the regular again. But the reality is, and this is my final statement, we cannot talk about health care costs. We cannot talk about a health care system by just focusing on Medicaid and Medicare. It needs to be a total system. And quite frankly, what is going on outside of Medicare and Medicaid is far more complicated than you might think. Thank you very much.
So you see why we want our mystery guest to join. We have officially 10 minutes. I'm going to use a prerogative and just take 15, so we'll go to 10:20. I encourage
well,
you.
Well, I want to go to 10:30, since I caused all this trouble.
No, 10:20. People have to take their breaks. But we will ask you to be precise in your questions and not make a speech before. I think Rob was first.
Okay, I have a simple question, more complicated question for Mike. The first question is, you know, you talked about your $1.9 billion the state is going to get, and I'm curious about how the state is using it. I saw your big budget gap that you had to get rid of, and so is it a budget-filling exercise, and then you're going to basically cap the Medicaid program to get it back? And then just the second part of my question, which is slightly different, but I'm very curious, is what do you see as the barriers to the CCO models moving more into the private sector as opposed to, you know, right now they're mostly Medicaid?
Right. So first part is the 1.9. It depends who's looking at it. From the state perspective, I would be the first to admit, yes, that did actually fill a budget hole. From the CMS perspective, that's upfront money. I mean, they don't care if you're filling a budget hole. I mean, they're viewing that as this is your kind of block grant to move some. Sorry, I shouldn't say block grant. This is your. I would never say that. This is your upfront money for that investment.
Does it cover an early expansion though? This population?
No. This is. I mean, for our current program. So this is, you know, for these 5 years. And I forget my amount, but for every year it kind of ratchets down. So the next piece is, you know, how do we transition this into the other markets and what are some of these barriers? You know, I think one area right now that we're focused on is in our Portland metro area. You know, we've got multiple competing health systems actually that have come together to form one CCO. And I think, you know, we're looking at how do we get alignment within that CCO. Do I see that maintaining kind of that formation in the private sector? No. But I do think, again, as I've been mentioning, kind of those care model attributes are going to be really what we're going to start to leverage in different contracts.
Because the CCO with multiple members, the CCO could be competing with its sub-components for private sector.
It could. I mean, the one thing that we have different in Oregon is that the CCOs don't have to have the same insurance requirements to be a commercial insurer. So if they're looking at taking that next step, then they would have to have the reserves and everything else to meet those regulatory requirements. And some do, but not all.
Alice.
Great, thanks. Alice Weiss, National Academy for State Health Policy. Great panel. And I love the conversation about states and Medicaid, despite whose existence, but it's still such a crucial part of the healthcare system. But I did want to ask a question specifically, Mike, about the discussion about local accountability. I saw a lot of discussion about state accountability, and clearly, even though it's not a block grant, you know, the state is potentially on the hook for, you know, its Medicaid share. But can you talk a little bit more about local accountability and what that really looks like on the ground?
Sure. Well, I mean, really, we have shifted risk now, I mean, from the state to these local CCOs. So they're now responsible for managing within that